The holidays are expensive. You're paying for gifts, travel, decorations, food, and before you know it, you've blown way past what you were planning to spend. Don't start the new year off with bad money vibes. Download Rocket Money to stay on top of your finances. The app pulls your income, expenses, and upcoming charges into one place so you can get the clearest picture of your money. It shows how much to set aside for bills and how much is safe to spend for the month so you can spend with confidence. No guesswork needed. Get alerts before bills hit, track budgets, and see every subscription you're paying for. Rocket Money also finds extra ways to save you money by canceling subscriptions you're not using and negotiating lower bills for you. On average, Rocket Money users can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Start the year off right by taking control of your finances. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Elissa Walker-Campbell, I want to welcome you back to Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show. Remember to listen to the show on the go. You can just download the Yahoo Sports Radio app by searching Yahoo Sports Radio in your app store, and you can listen on any computer or smart device by going to streamysr.com. That is streamysr.com. Normal data rates apply. And as always, we deliver the biggest and the very best in sports. You will want to stay close. Two-time NBA champion with the San Antonio Spurs. He had a 13-year NBA career. Malik Rose, he is everywhere. Of course, he is the color analyst with the Philadelphia 76ers, and we always enjoy his work on NBA TV and NBA radio. It's his first time on the show. Good evening, Malik. It's so nice to have you on. Thank you.
Man, I'm going to hire you to be like my theme music or whatever. That was a hell of an introduction. Thank you for having me, Alyssa, and thanks for the introduction.
Hey, we got a power up. It is Malik Rose. So let's talk here. Big news for the 76er fans this week as they finished third in the NBA draft lottery on Tuesday night for the second consecutive season and fourth time overall. Malik, what is the biggest need for the Sixers? I mean, who should they be targeting? Is there a clear choice?
Oh, man, how much time do we have?
Go for it.
The Sixers, they have quite a few needs. Like some of the, the other teams that didn't fare as well as they wanted to fare last season record-wise. The Sixers have a lot of holes to fill. But the city really, it's odd because Philadelphia is one of the more impatient fans. They have one of the fan bases that are some of the most impatient fans. And they've really been behind this plan that Sam Hinkie has laid out. They are patient and they're waiting. They're seeing what's happening with Nerlens Noel and Joel Embiid. Mm-hmm. And now they get to add another piece to that puzzle with the third pick in this year's upcoming draft. So we'll see who they're going to get. But the fans are behind it and the plan is in place.
Well, you know, the Sixers, they're impatient, as you were talking about, but they're a very proud organization. I mean, they've produced some legendary basketball talents in Julius Erving and Moses Malone and Charles Barkley. And so my question to you is, as we look at the void that they need to fill, who do you believe would be the best point guard in this year's draft for the Sixers?
Yeah, being as though the Sixers have, two big guys in Nerlens Noel and Joel Embiid, I would think, conventional wisdom would have them looking for a guard. And fortunately for them, there are two pretty good guards in this draft. Emmanuel Mudiay, the kid that out of Texas, I'm sure you know him, and
yes,
he played over China last year. Mm-hmm. And D'Angelo Russell out of Ohio State. So both those guys are really, really good. They have the measurables, like the body of today's like guard, man. I mean, today's NBA point guard is like 6'2", 6'3", 6'4", and long and athletic. And both these guys are about 6'5", and long. But they have, similar games, but a few differences. I think Mudiay is the more the better penetrator. He can get to the rack better, mm-hmm. but I think D'Angelo Russell is a better shooter. And depending on which way the Sixers want to go, they'll decide between those two. But I don't think there's a wrong choice, when it comes to both those guards.
NBA great and analyst with the Philadelphia 76ers, Malik Rose, is joining us tonight at Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show. We are interactive. We would absolutely love to hear from you. Join us at Twitter at eRadioSports, and you can always email the show at Elissa@YahooSportsRadio.com. So just some curiosity on my part. I mean, if the Sixers could somehow draft one of these dynamic guards and continue to build on this young roster, how many more wins are we looking at for next season? Come on, be optimistic, Malik.
Okay, I'll be optimistic and say, I would say hopefully 25 to 30. Last year they had 17. It was a tough year, man. Injuries kind of hurt them, but the Sixers, they were kind of like auditioning any and everybody last year. So the team never really got any chemistry kind of. I mean, they weren't like at each other's throats, but it was hard to get a rhythm because there was always somebody new on the team because Sam Hinkie wanted to look at so many different people. This year, you know, I hope there's less of that as far as the revolving door to the locker room. And I think I hope they start to, you know, build a little bit more of a foundation. I like what I see in Joel Embiid, man. I mean, this guy has the upside to be like a franchise changer. I mean, he is legitimately 7'1", you know, just good NBA body, and he has skills, Alyssa. I mean, the guy has good footwork. He can catch the ball, and he has the range out to the three-point line. So he could be somebody that the Sixers build around, and he could be here for a long time. You add in a Nerlens Noel, who was an all-rookie team this year, first-team all-rookie, and, you know, maybe one of the guards in Moutier or D'Angelo Russell. Then you kind of have a core, and hopefully we can see some things start to take shape for the Sixers.
How fired up do you get about this year's draft? I mean, is it more for the fans? I mean, we're talking about these guys. I mean, they're young pups. They're unproven. I mean, what gets me fired up is that when you start talking about free agents, I mean, these guys are going to make an immediate difference.
Yeah, I don't know what it is, man. It could be football, baseball, or basketball, but people go crazy for the draft. And we haven't even had the draft yet. We had the lottery, which is going to determine the draft. But I think it's just the excitement of, you know, what's new and what's exciting, what's sexy and you know, hip and these new guys, you know, Jahlil Okafor, Karl-Anthony Towns, Moutier, Russell, all these guys, I mean, they just, you know, add to that or whatever. And I think it's all good stuff for the league. And the more excitement we can have about the game of basketball, our game, I think the better. So I'm going to stay getting excited about the draft and the lottery and the like.
Hey, Malik Rose is with us tonight at Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big East Sports Show. You can listen to him everywhere on NBA Radio. You can watch him on NBA TV and, of course, the color announcer with the Sixers. And I know earlier this week, Malik, you had an opportunity to sit down and talk to Tyus Jones, and he's projected to be, what, a mid to late first round pick. What were your impressions of him?
Yeah, I watched him as a player, and I liked the confidence he played with as a player. I mean, he was never afraid to take big shots, and for a freshman, he really never seemed to be fazed by the big moments, especially the Final Four in the championship game. And when we had a chance to sit down with him, Justin Termini and myself, we kind of got that from him as far as just a confident player. He had a level of humility, and you know, he was just confident in his abilities. And we hit him with some tough questions. I remember asking Tyus about, you know, the fact that he's not 6'4", and he's not, you know, overly athletic or overly quick, but you know, he's still able to be effective. He was most outstanding player in the Final Four. How does he think his game is going to translate to the next level? What's he going to do when he plays bigger, faster, more athletic guards? And he recognized the other guards in the NBA, the top guards, you know, the challenge they face. But he seems really confident in his abilities to, one, hold his own, and two, learn enough where one day he could compete with them. And I like that.
Yeah, you talk about him being confident in his abilities. I mean, he's made the statement that he believes he is the most pure point guard in the league. Do you agree?
He probably is, just because of, you know, his floor game as far as, like, you know, anticipating the play. You know, he played for Coach K, so he's like, you know, he has two jobs out there on the floor, two point guard jobs. You know, he has to make sure everybody's
right.
In the right place. Every turnover is his fault and stuff. So I would say, yeah, he's probably from an intellectual part of it. He's probably the best pure point guard in this draft, but that's not a slight on anyone else because I think D'Angelo Russell, even though Moutier may be better at getting to the rack than he is, D'Angelo Russell sees the game, at least from what I can see from watching tape on him. He sees the game on closer to a pro level, being as though he can anticipate plays developing, and you can see like the passes out of his hands before the play is finishing being developed. So I like that. It sees, you know, shows a high basketball IQ for him, and I think there are some really, really good guards. I mean, in the top, middle, and bottom of the first round, you're going to see quite a few point guards being scooped up.
As we zero in on Tyus Jones, I mean, of course, he finished his college career, you know, winning everything, you know, winning a national title. What did he share with you about having the opportunity to play for Coach K? Because that's priceless.
Yeah, he talked about, you know, plenty of the lessons he learned from Coach K, but the main thing I asked him to zero in on one, and he talked about communicating, you know, being a leader. He has to be able to, you know, communicate with his teammates, listen to them definitely, but being the ultimate communicator out there helped him be a better leader. And that's one of the lessons he took from Coach K that he's going to lean on most, he said, when he gets to the NBA.
76ers color analyst Malik Rose is with us tonight at YSR, the Big East Sports Show. We've got to step aside, and we'll be right back with much, much more. And Malik Rose. Hey, we are so glad you're with us tonight at Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show. I'm Elissa Walker-Campbell as we take you through the fastest 2 hours in radio. It is hour number two right here at YSR, and we are going one-on-one with Malik Rose, of course, the 76ers color commentator, NBA champ in 99 and 2003. We want to quickly take time to relive some of those memories with the Spurs, but continue to give us a recap as far as the Sixers this past season and perhaps the type of growth and improvement that you were able to witness.
Yeah, it was really cool to watch the team. And, you know, for a team that lost 65 games this year, you know, one would think it would have been a nightmare. And it really wasn't, man. One thing I always tipped my cap to the Sixers on was each and every night. I could count on one hand max, the amount of games they actually came out and laid an egg. And, you know, you're down 25 by the first time out in the first quarter. And, you got to, like, sell Kool-Aid the rest of the game. It wasn't like that. These kids played hard, man, and they never really looked at their record. Like, they just thought they could get better each and every day, and I think that's a tribute to, one, them, but two, their coaching staff. I thought Brett Brown did a really good job, and his staff, keeping these young guys, you know, focused on the job at hand, getting them motivated to play each and every day. And I'd say 95% of the time, man, they came out, they gave everything they had, you know, in their shirts, left it on the floor. And that made my job, selfishly, made my job as a color commentator easy, because I wasn't, like, you know, commentating a mop-up game or something. Like, they competed every night, and they got better, to answer your question. Towards the end of the year, this team, man, I swear, like, I used to joke on air at the beginning of the season that they that they defended worse than a court-appointed lawyer. But towards the end of the year, man, you're looking at a team that was flirting with the top 10 and as far as defensive efficiency goes. So that's really, really a great testament to the hard work they put in, the perseverance they displayed, and I was glad they were rewarded with that.
You know, Malik, I was going to ask you, how difficult was that for you as a color analyst to, you know, keep that energy up, keep those fans believing? Because let's think back, let's reflect what they were 0-17 when they started off this season.
Man, yeah. I didn't think we'd get a win in the calendar year back in 2014, you know, some of those games, man.
But you got to believe,
again,
right?
Yeah. Yeah, right. It was like, and to, like, to their credit, again, they were the only ones that were, that believed they were going to, you know, win that game. And I think it was Minnesota. At Minnesota, they got their first win, man. And the plane ride back was fun because those guys kind of, it was like a collective exhale, and, you know, they celebrated a little bit. And it was good to see them, you know, smile and be rewarded, because they were putting in honest day's work, man. I mean, for a team that was 0-17, you would think they'd be slacking off and playing and joking and not taking the game seriously. They just, you know, they didn't have much talent. They couldn't compete talent-wise on a night-in, night-out basis most of the time. And in the beginning of the season, it caught them by storm, took them by storm. And it took him a while to learn how to deal with that.
Just a few more minutes with Malik Rose tonight at YSR, the Big E Sports Show. And you were talking about the job that Brett Brown has done. He's entering in, what, to his third season. How big of a challenge is that for him to coach these 20-year-olds, to help them understand and, you know, what the NBA culture, what it's all about, and to grow these guys up?
Man, it's funny you brought that up, because I remember talking to Brett about that. You know, we spent time back in San Antonio when we were beating up on the Dallas Mavericks together.
Go easy. Come on, Emily.
Yeah, I hear you. You know, but, you know, Brett Brown, you know, he spent his first, 12, 13 years in the league, maybe 15 years in the league with San Antonio with, like, a veteran group like that. And he said one of the things he struggled with was, you know, these guys are 19, 20 years old, and they've never really been coached like that, or, you know, like the verbiage he was saying. Like, in San Antonio, they could change things on the fly, and, you know, if they wanted to trap a pick and roll, they, you know,
right,
we black 40 or black 20 or something like that. But here in Philadelphia, he had to call a timeout, draw it up, explain to these guys in no uncertain terms what he wanted them to do. And he said it was just a laborious, a laborious project, because it took so much work to get something like that done. But he enjoyed the challenge, and, you know, those guys are in the gym right now working. So I really think they're they're improving on that, and maybe they'll be able to, you know, make changes on the fly next year.
Very special interview tonight with Malik Rose, NBA champ, two-time NBA champ, of course, played for the league's best in Greg Popovich, won two titles. I got to ask you this. What were some of the lessons that he taught you?
Man, Pop was a great teacher, man. I mean, he's definitely a mentor in my life to this day. I mean, I can call that guy with a question, and he'll give me his honest, unbiased answer. But I think mostly, hard work, he really taught me, you know, the value, I guess, of a day's work. And one of the lessons, like, you know, I was All-American in college and, you know, thought I could do this, that, and the third. But when I got to the NBA, I mean, it was a sobering wake-up call. And he taught me that it's not about me, it's about the team. And that's one of the biggest lessons. Like, I always thought if I didn't win my individual battle out there on the floor, or I didn't have numbers, you know, to show for a night's work, that I let the team down. And he said, no, as long as we collectively get done what we want to get done, you're part of a unit. You know, we all succeed, but don't look at it on an individual basis. Look at it on the team basis. And that really helped me, because I used to really kind of crucify myself if I didn't play as well as I thought I should have.
Okay, Malik Rose has been with us tonight at YSR, the Big E Sports Show. My final question for you is, when is Tim Duncan? Is this going to be his last season? When's he going to retire?
I hope he gets one more in. After 20, mm-hmm. he can do what he wants. But if he finishes, you know, a cool 20, man, that'll be saying something, man. I mean, that guy was, I mean, 19 years in the league. 19.
Incredible.
I mean, I joke with him, like, he's 130 years old, has one good knee, and still went out there, averaged 17, 11, and 2, and made third-team All-NBA. I mean, that means he was one of the top, what, six or seven power forwards in the game at age 39. In his 19th year in the league, man. I mean, he is truly the best power forward ever to play, in my humble estimation.
It's been truly an honor to have with us tonight at YSR, the Big E Sports Show, the great Malik Rose. We so enjoy your work, and we'll stay tuned, okay?
Thank you, Alyssa. Thanks for having me. Have a good holiday.
Absolutely. You too. Be safe. Much more straight ahead tonight at YSR, the Big E Sports Show, as we continue with our NBA talk. Yes, welcome back inside the Quicken Loans studios at Yahoo Sports Radio and yahoosportsradio.com, where we always deliver the biggest and best in sports. And you will want to stay close, because you're in for a real treat. We are so delighted to have back with us Sooner great former OU quarterback and two-time Orange Bowl MVP. Such an honor to welcome back on our Progressive Insurance Celebrity Guest Line, J.C. Watts, on this Friday night. Good evening, J.C.
Big E, how are you?
Hey, we're doing great down here in Houston, Texas, and it is absolutely wonderful to have you back with us. It's been a while, and there are a number of topics that I want to dive into tonight and get your perspective and your thoughts. And obviously, as I just read in the open, you were a standout quarterback at OU. You played in the CFL. In fact, in 1981, you were the Grey Cup MVP. So we thought, you know, let's get your perspective on Deflategate. New England's Patriots quarterback Tom Brady, the golden boy of the NFL. Gosh, he gets suspended on Monday for four regular season games without pay. What was your reaction to the punishment and how they disciplined him? Was it too much or too little?
Well, four games going to cost him about $2 million. I really, you know, losing a first-round draft choice, that probably hurts more than anything, a first-rounder and a fourth-rounder. And the Patriots have proven that, you know, they find golden nuggets even in the latter round, so that those draft choices are going to hurt. I don't know if it's good, bad, or indifferent. I don't know if it's too much, if it's too little. I do think the right message has to be sent in terms of making one pay when they don't play by the rules. I mean, we are a nation that's rule of law. We have our laws in place to kind of govern us, and he broke the rules. I probably would have guessed at the outset that it wouldn't have been that severe, but I think being as severe as it is, I think kind of sends the message that we think you really crossed the line. But who would have been surprised? Being a quarterback playing in cold weather, 11 out of 12 balls deflated. When I heard that, I knew. I mean, I would have. I think a person's innocent until proven guilty.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm telling you, when I heard that 11 out of 12 balls had been deflated, didn't have the proper PSI, I thought it doesn't add up. One or two, one or two out of 12, but, listen, 11 out of 12 balls deflated. I could have told you at the outset that that was a very strong indication to me that the balls had been tampered with.
Sooner great J.C. Watts is joining us tonight at Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show. I'm your host, Elissa Walker Campbell. And I got to ask you this, J.C. Obviously, you're a former collegiate star quarterback. You played for Barry Switzer. I mean, is deflating footballs, is that common? Is it a common practice? Because we have seen and listened to a mixed reaction across the board.
But, Elissa, think about this. This is just, I think, indicative of where we are in the culture of our society today. I mean, everybody wants to get an edge. I mean, think about this. We had two financial companies, two commercial banks, that paid $24 billion in fines surrounding the subprime loan issue. $24 billion in fines. Right. Nobody goes to jail. Nobody loses their jobs. I mean, we had the Pine Tar situation in baseball. We had the stuff that the pitchers put on the ball to give it a different twist. We've had issues with steroids. Everybody trying to get an advantage some kind of way. I think that's just, it's all indicative of kind of where we are in our culture. And, if we've got the things, the testing in cycling, the steroids in cycling and it's no one particular league. We've seen it in football. We've seen it in basketball. We've seen it in baseball. We've seen it in track and field. We've seen it in cycling, and I think it's just kind of indicative of the culture. Look at where we are socially in America today. I mean, we're dealing with things in on the social scene. We're dealing with things in economics today in the business community that you and I 20 years ago would have said, or even today, we're scratching our heads saying, I never thought I would see the day. And I don't care, Republican, Democrat, black or white, man or woman, liberal or conservative, moderate, if we're honest, we would have to scratch our heads today and say, there are things going on in our society and our culture that we would have said, or we have to say, I never thought I'd see the day. And deflating 11 out of 12 balls, I think it's another sign of the times.
Well, I got to ask you, were you ever tempted to mess with the inflation of a ball? Because I even think back to some of the NFL players. Matt Leinart, he came out and tweeted that every team tampers with footballs. Ask any quarterback in the league. This is ridiculous. That's Matt Leinart.
I disagree with that. 20 years ago, Alyssa, I was too stupid to know to deflate the ball.
Come on, JC.
In the wishbone offense, you didn't have to worry about throwing the football. We didn't throw the football.
Right, right.
We pitched it about mm-hmm. 4 or 5 yards deep behind us. That's about like saying that, every wife cheats on her husband. To paint with a broad brush, I think there are guys that go out and they are concerned about doing it the right way, or saying that every husband beats his wife because one or two do it, or because all football players beat their wives because we see two or three that did. I think that's an unfair statement to say that all quarterbacks are concerned about being able to handle the ball in cold weather or in dry weather, whatever the case might be, But if the rule says the ball has to be a certain diameter or a certain air pressure, I don't think all quarterbacks go out and say, let's fudge a little bit in order to get an advantage. I disagree with Matt on that.
Hey, Sooner great and former OU quarterback, four-term Republican Congressman J.C. Watts is joining us tonight at Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show. We absolutely, we're interactive. We want to hear from you. Get your thoughts. Join us at Twitter, at E Radio Sports. You can email the show at Elissa@YahooSportsRadio.com. You know, J.C., I want to back up for a moment because I think you're so spot on. It just seems like, you know, we listen to the varying opinions, the response. It's been very interesting, but it just seems that we are continuing to lower our standards, and it's just very disappointing to hear folks say, you know, if you're not cheating, you're not trying. Just watered down ethics. It is truly, it's pervasive in our country right now.
Well, Alyssa, I remember, I think there is an attitude, and I think we're all guilty of this, but I think when we do have to stop and take a deep breath and I think analyze it from a sincere perspective, and objectively, not we have to analyze these things, I think, objectively, not subjectively. And I remember, you know, I grew up on Dallas Cowboy football long before ESPN or Yahoo Sports or Fox Sports Network. We got the Dallas Cowboys on Sunday afternoon after church. And so Roger Staubach, Craig Morton, Tom, Bob Lilly, you know, Bob Hayes. I mean, Walt Garrison, I grew up on those names.
Cliff Harris.
And I remember here about, seven, 8 years ago, my brother-in-law, who's from Dallas, we were talking about this one player that had been a problem child in the league. And then the Dallas Cowboys picked him up. And my brother-in-law, I told my brother-in-law, I said, yeah, now, I thought he was a bad guy when he's playing for everybody else, but he's okay now because he's playing for the Cowboys. You know,
right.
So we tend, and I was saying that tongue in cheek, but that's kind of how we view the world. You know, we say, you know, if it would have been the Cowboys quarterback that would have done it, how would we have felt about it if we're a supporter of the Cowboys? If the Texans would have done it, how would we have felt if they would have done it, if we're a Texan fan, or if we were a Giants fan, or a Colts fan? The bottom line is, Alyssa, even if it's a team that J.C. Watt supports, as much as I would hate it, it doesn't make it right. It's still wrong. But again, we don't think that my addictions, I don't ever think that my addictions are worse than your addictions. I mean, or my feet stink as badly as your feet stink. The rules of the game governs how we play the game. And to say that, you know, well, all quarterbacks do it, it doesn't make it right. It just means that all the quarterbacks are wrong. And as long as it's the rules that governs the integrity of the game, we ought to abide by those rules. Now, if we think it's a bad rule, we need to change it. If we think it stinks, we need to change it. If we think the PSI should be 10.2 as opposed to 12.0, then let's change it. But as long as it says what it says, those are the rules of the game, and you hurt the credibility of the game when you do otherwise.
You hurt the credibility, the integrity of the game. Exclusive conversation tonight with J.C. Watt, Sooner Great, as we break down Deflategate. So stick around. Much more straight ahead tonight at YSR with J.C. Watts. Welcome back to Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show. I'm Elissa Walker-Campbell. Remember, as always, to listen to the show on the go. You just download the Yahoo Sports Radio app by searching Yahoo Sports Radio in your app store, and you can listen on any computer or smart device by going to streamysr.com. That's streamysr.com, and normal data rates apply. Okay, so the Mayweather-Pacquiao fight, that is long in the rearview mirror. It's time now. We're going to shift gears, and we are going to take time for a book review. Author Jonathan Gottschall has released his new book. It is titled The Professor in the Cage, Why Men Fight and Why We Like to Watch. It's good to have you with us tonight at YSR. Thank you, Jonathan.
Hey, thanks for having me on.
All right, so let's open up with sharing your unlikely journey from the college classroom to the fighting cage and how this book even came about. I mean, why in the world would an English professor decide to become an MMA fighter at middle age? My question to you is, Jonathan, were you having a midlife crisis?
I think I was having a bit of a midlife crisis. I was, you know, 39 years old at the time, I believe.
Oh, my gosh.
Working as an English instructor at a small liberal arts college.
Sure.
And one day I'm at my office hours, and I happen to glance out the front window, and this new business had opened up across the street. It was one of these cage fighting gyms. And I was just ambushed by this emotion I didn't expect, and the emotion was envy. You know, I envied those young guys across the street. I could see them dancing and rolling and hitting and tackling. And it seemed like they were so alive in their cage while I'm kind of rotting away in my office cubicle. And so I had this thought, and it was sort of a joke at my own expense. I was like, wouldn't it be funny if I walked across the street and joined them, me, you know, because I'm almost 40, not in great shape, and I've literally never been in a fight before. And then my next thought was, hey, maybe there's a book in that, a sort of nonfiction version of Fight Club. I go across the street, I try to learn how to fight, but along the way I'd also be asking these big questions about violence and the role that sports play in human life and all kinds of other things.
Hey, Jonathan Gottschall is with us tonight at Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show. We are shining the spotlight on his new book, The Professor in the Cage, Why Men Fight and Why We Like to Watch. And before we break down the book, I got to ask you this. I mean, I'm looking at your bio. You're a happily married guy. You got two kids, two daughters. What in the world was your wife's reaction when you told her that you had the desire to become an MMA fighter at middle age?
Oh, well, first, you know, she had to figure out whether I was joking or not. And then I sort of convinced her, I told her my whole dumb plan for becoming a cage fighter. And this is a verbatim quote. She says, "You'll be killed. You have no skills."
Oh.
And that sort of hurt my feelings. But it was true. I don't have any skills.
It was probably a motivator, though, too, huh?
But then she became incredibly comfortable with it to the point where it was almost disturbing. You know, I'd come home from the gym and I'd be sort of beat up and I'd be like, oh, man, I can't even see straight. I got hit so hard today. And she'd be like, did you unload the dishwasher? You know, she had very little sympathy for me at the end. And I was thinking, my God, woman, don't you love me at all? she became alarmingly comfortable with it, that's what I'm saying.
Well, what about the response and feedback from the professors and your colleagues? I mean, were they supportive of this? We were talking about in the open in your English professor?
Yeah, so, yeah, English professors don't generally approve of blood sport, you know? So, and always part of the joke, that joke at my own expense, when I was looking out across at the gym from my English department, always part of the joke was that my colleagues would be able to literally look up from the poems that they were reading at their desk, glance out the window, and see me over there in the cage. And I thought they'd be scandalized and offended, but they weren't. For the most part, they were way more tolerant and open-minded about it than I thought they would be. They were pretty cool about it.
So, Jonathan, did you always have the desire to fight, to be in a cage fight? Because let's be honest for the listeners across the country tonight. I mean, MMA fighting, it requires intense strength. I mean, it is a full contact sport. I mean, you're getting punched, choked, kicked into submission. I mean, why would you want to be a part of that and subject yourself to such extreme pain?
Two reasons. One, first off, I describe the sport as one-on-one tackle football with the addition of punching, kicking, kneeing, elbowing, and strangling. You know, so it's a really fierce and violent sport. Why did I want to do it? I'm not really sure I did want to do it. You know, part of me didn't want to do it. I was scared. I was full of anxiety the whole time. I did it for a couple reasons. One, I wanted to see if it was possible for a man like me, a guy who isn't naturally brave, to go into that sort of situation and practice being brave, you know, night after night, until it sort of became habitual. So I'd never done a brave thing, and I wanted to see if I could. On the other hand, I also had a very strong scholarly and intellectual reason for going over there. I was interested in questions about violence.
Mm-hmm.
I was interested in this big question about why men fight, not just in a cage, not just in sport contexts, but why men are capable and are responsible for the lion's share of violence all around the world. And MMA gave me a good way to bridge into those bigger questions about violence.
Okay, so why men fight? That was one of your questions. What did you learn?
Well, you know, a lot of times it's kind of looks illogical. Men's violence looks illogical. For the most part, they're not fighting over, and I'm talking about mano a mano violence, not warfare. For the most part, they're not fighting over tangible things. like money or the last hamburger when everybody's starving. For the most part, they're fighting over intangible things. They're fighting over something you can't see and you can't smell and you can't touch. They're fighting basically over honor. They're fighting over respect. This goes way, way back to duelists, you know, hundreds and hundreds of years ago. And when men get in fights today, it is most likely to be over matters of respect. Someone will be offended. Someone will feel insulted. There'll be bluster and threats back and forth. The men will close the distance. If no one backs down, a fight will break out.
Jonathan Gottschall is joining us tonight at Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show. I want to encourage you to go out and get a copy of his book. It is titled The Professor in the Cage, Why Men Fight and Why We Like to Watch. And that's a question for me. I mean, it is surprising to me. I'm just saying this personally. The popularity, I mean, the audience. I mean, how can the intensity of the fight, the violence, how can that be pleasurable to one?
I think that's a great question. I mean, that's one of the things that really drew me to this, because it was a very personal question to me. I've been watching fights on TV, I don't know, maybe for 20 years as a pretty avid fight fan. And I've been thinking to myself, hey, I'm a civilized, decent, peace-loving woman.
Right, yeah.
What's wrong with me? I appear not to be a sociopath, so why am I watching this stuff? And why do we all watch this stuff, you know? I mean, even those of us who wouldn't be caught dead at a cage fight, we're still consuming a huge amount of violent entertainment, whether in sports or our movies, films, video games, whatever. But I eventually came around to the point of view that it's not largely barbarism and bloodlust that draws us to this. I think it's kind of almost close to the opposite. If we just wanted barbarism or bloodlust, we could download ISIS torture murder videos and watch those all day long. But most of us don't want to see that, but we still find it hard not to watch a big fight. I think it's just because it's an incredibly intense drama. It's an incredibly intense showdown, climactic. It's reality TV. All the pain is real. All the elation is real. And counterintuitively, all the savagery in a fight brings out not only maybe the worst angels of human nature, but the best angels too. It sets up these conditions of adversity that force the fighters to be heroic, to be courageous, to show perseverance and fortitude and character. So we're drawn to a fight maybe partly by the worst angels of human nature, but I think we go there to admire the best parts of human nature too.
Hey, Jonathan Gottschall has been with us tonight at YSR, the Big E Sports Show. Again, the title of his book is The Professor in the Cage, Why Men Fight and Why We Like to Watch. Congratulations on the book. And I can only say I'm sure your wife loved the benefits of this type of training. I mean, you endured 2 years of intense training and you probably look pretty shiny. So
I did for like 15 minutes. I actually had abs. They're long gone now.
Very good. Thank you so much for joining us tonight, Jonathan.
Thanks so much. Bye-bye.
Absolutely. Much more straight ahead tonight at YSR, the Big E Sports Show. You get ready. We're going to be talking some NBA talk, the Western and the Eastern Conference Finals. Stay close.